ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, welcome to the Horror Connection. I am Tony Viejo. With me, as always, is Mr. Mike Blinsky. Mike, how are we doing today?
Doing pretty well, sir. How are you feeling?
Doing pretty good.
I'm pretty excited because even though we did that little intro, this is sort of the first real show.
This is like episode one.
Yeah.
Before was like 0 hour.
Yeah.
That was like episode
zero.
That was our prequel.
Yeah.
We did it in order. Good for us.
Yeah. We're good at this.
Yeah.
Look at that continuity.
0, 1, boom.
Yeah. We're about to throw continuity away with the series we're talking about.
I'm really excited about this one because before when we sat down, like, so what are we going to do? I was like, well, one, we're picking one of the most recognizable horror movie franchises to start out with. So if this starts off as hot garbage, but then like halfway through it works itself through, hey, 100 episode anniversary, we go back. Redo the first two episodes.
That's what's great about a podcast too, because we can keep this going for a long time.
Oh yeah!
Not only is there tons of material to talk about, we can always revisit things.
Yeah,
because our feelings on something a few years from now could change.
Like for example, my feelings about Halloween 1 and certain things that happened in Halloween 1 changed after I saw Halloween 2018.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're about to get into all that. We were talking off mic for a second and realized we were wasting material.
We were talking off mic. Speaking of talking, you can reach us at The Horror Connection at The Horror Con, CONNE, number one. That's The Horror Con, CONNE, one, the number. That's on your Twitter. You can tweet us or twat us.
Twat us? I think it's twat.
Twatted would be past tense.
So like anything I've twatted you.
I've twatted a lot of times. Good Guns N' Roses song off of Chinese Democracy. Check out that album. Yeah. Best Guns N' Roses album. Anyway.
I didn't even say that. See that, people?
No, it is. It's a really good album.
I really
from start
love
to finish.
Album.
It's a solid album.
When I say that, people are like, oh, you're just biased. No, it's a really good album.
You're biased for different reasons. I'm biased for different reasons. So those reasons mean something to us. They should mean something to other people, and you'll never know. But fantastic album. And in ipso facto in 2008, if you knew me, that's what you got for Christmas that year.
Nice.
Yeah. 15 copies I bought.
Nice.
At Best Buy in Panama City Beach, Florida, sold 15 copies of Chinese Democracy on its first day out, and I gave them out for Christmas presents the following later that year.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice.
Anyway. So we're starting off with like the granddaddy of the slasher genre. We decided we would start off with a genre we like, which is the slasher genre. One of our favorite movie genres overall, I believe. And then we went, well, do we go with, like, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street? Do we go with the heavy hitters from the 80s, Friday the 13th? No, let's start with the granddaddy of the slasher genre. Not Psycho.
No, and it's important that you say that because somebody somewhere is going to comment, like, Psycho or
Black Christmas.
Black Christmas. Yeah. And I love Bob Clark, and I love Black Christmas. I love Psycho. And you could even go further back and see elements of it a little bit in movies like Peeping Tom and things like that. But Halloween is where it all comes together, where it becomes a slasher movie.
It's where you get your survivor girl, where you get your protagonist, where you get everything that comes together in this ball of fun that was pretty much an all magnum of just suggestions.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like John Carpenter and Deborah Hill sitting like, we're going to make a movie about someone going around killing people on Halloween. It was just like, we're going to make a movie. So I was like, it should be about babysitters being killed. And it was like, yes.
That's it.
That's it. And you should do it with something else on a holiday. You know, like, it's just suggestions out the window. Like, spawn this. So, like, you know, just listen to your peers and things could happen for you. Like, you could make a movie called Halloween. And, like, the production behind this movie. Like, we'll talk about the movie itself, but let's talk about, like, how it was made. Like, I want to look at that. Like, if I remember correctly, cause I'm just going off of a double disc VHS I had from the 20th anniversary of this movie. It was orange, and you got it at Blockbuster. And, like, I haven't done any research. So if I'm wrong on things, I'm sorry. There's been a lot of drugs and alcohol since I've researched any of the things I will talk about. So I might have dates wrong, people wrong, confusion. But you could tweet us, correct us. It's fine. We don't care. I think they started production on this movie in May of 1978.
I mean, I'm going to say yeah.
And like,
I feel like I didn't look. I did do a little bit of research just so I got a couple of names. So like you had said, like suggestions and things like that. So it was a gentleman named Erwin Yablons who came up with the idea of somebody stalking and killing babysitters.
Right.
So that was like his thing. And him and another producer were already looking at John Carpenter.
Yeah. Mustafa Akkad.
Mustafa Akkad. Yeah. Who who stayed with the series and now it's his son who kind of oversees.
By the way, I don't want to get political or anything on here, but fuck you, ISIS, because you killed him. A terrorist attack actually killed that man. So that's as political as I'll get. You know, I'm not against anything else they've done, but they killed the producer of the Halloween franchise. Fuck that.
Fuck you, ISIS.
Fuck you, ISIS, for killing the Halloween franchise. Yeah. So, like, he wanted the holiday. They wanted this. And they were like, oh, then, like, John Carpenter just made Assault and Precinct 13?
Correct. Yeah. Assault and Precinct 13.
Great movie. Remake's okay. The original's really good.
I didn't hate the remake.
I said it was okay.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was mind-blowing.
No. Like, I felt like okay was a little strong. I didn't. No. I wasn't. Yeah, I was backpedaling okay just a little bit.
Oh, it was all right.
Yeah, it was all right.
Oh, it was all right. Okay, all right. Yeah, so Carpenter's got done Saw in Precinct 13. These guys were like, hey, you want to make this horror movie? And
kill some babysitters, yeah, do it on the holiday.
Kill some babysitters. And he was like, yeah, we can do it on Halloween. And I even think he talked to the people behind Black Christmas first. And to get, like, you know, be like, hey, I'm making a movie about Halloween, and it's going to be a slasher movie, so, nah-ha-ha. Yours came out in 76 and had Margot Kidder. I'm going to have the daughter of the chick from Psycho in my movie, you know. Because what was her name? Ann Curtis? I mean, I know it's Jamie Lee Curtis. What's her mom?
It's Jamie Lee Curtis.
I know
Curtis,
it's Jamie Lee
sir.
Curtis's. She's the most famous from Aphrodite on the planet.
We've really undermined our authority on horror movies. If you're like, that lady from the Halloween movies.
No, her mom's
that we're
name,
about to
Joanne?
Talk about.
What's her mom's name from Psycho?
We're just going to edit it in later. I'm going to do a really bad overdub on top of it.
So we don't know. We don't know Jamie Lee Curtis's mom's name. Okay. Joan Curtis?
No, so Curtis was her dad.
Curtis was dead.
So we're going totally in the wrong direction.
Tony Curtis was her dad.
Tony Curtis was her
Janet Lehigh.
Janet Leigh.
Janet Leigh.
Yeah, yes. That's it. Jamie Lee Curtis. We knew that. We were fucking with you guys.
We deduced
so you can play
that.
Along.
Deduced.
Yeah, we were letting you guys play along at home. You're welcome.
Yeah.
Interactive.
The four people that actually listeners are screaming at us right now. I'm listening to a Halloween podcast and they don't know.
They just said they don't know who Jamie Lee Curtis is.
They don't know who Jamie Lee Curtis is. Really? She's in four of the goddamn movies.
Unsubscribe.
Sorry, five.
Good point. Yeah, I was going to correct that.
Yeah. Which, fun fact, we are going to watch along one Halloween movie, and it is one of the five movies that Jamie Lee Curtis is in.
Dun, dun, dun.
So you have
more play at home. Guess which one that's going to be.
Guess which one that's going to be.
You're fucking wrong. I assure you.
It's not going to be the one you think.
Yeah.
I can tell you that right now. It's gonna be, you're going to go, really? And we're going to be like, yeah. And you're like, why? Because we had to. So they shot this movie over 20 days. Now, I've never made a movie. You've made plenty of movies.
I have. I made a couple.
You've made a couple. They shot this over 20 days in 1978 for like $300,000, which is still like not a lot of money in 1978. No. Fun fact, they have Donald Pleasance, right? Which wasn't the first pick. Like, they weren't like, you know what? We're going to get the guy who played the Dr. No, right? He was Dr. No?
He was
a Bond.
He was in one of them.
He was a Bond. Was he GoldenEye? Was that GoldenEye?
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not a Bond guy.
Neither am I.
Yeah.
He has more. See, sidetrack real quick. Everyone always hated on all these horror movies throughout the 80s. Oh, there's so many sequels. They make them every year. There's like 28 Bond movies. No one brings that up.
So, to be fair, too.
Your dad used to sit around on TBS on Sundays and watch every goddamn Bond movie while you were just trying to get a peek at maybe some Batman, some Adam West action on the 700 Club, on the Family Channel. And your dad was too busy watching Bond films. Fucking James Bond and all those goddamn sequels. Sorry.
So that's a good point, though, because James Bond is one of those series, too, that has, like, contested sequels and different continuities and things like that.
The multiple different timelines.
Yeah. Again, another choose-your-own-adventure continuity
kind
of thing.
And that's a great choose-your-own-adventure. That's a great way to break down the Halloween franchise, because you do get to choose-your-own-adventure with it. You know, you can take it anywhere. And that's going to be a fun thing we'll get into down the line. But Donald Pleasance wasn't the first choice. They went with either Peter Cushing or Christopher Lee. But the two producers got into an argument over that because they didn't want it to feel like a Hammer film. But they still went after Peter Cushing. But Peter Cushing was making another movie at the time. He was making a small film, independent.
Was it that space movie?
It's that space movie. Spaceballs? It's based upon Spaceballs.
Oh, okay.
Spaceballs came out first. And
it
then
was
they
that
made
parody movie of Spaceballs.
Yeah, that has like 9 sequels to it.
Yeah, another one.
Another one parody movie that has 9 sequels over the original. Weird. I think the Wayans brothers had something to do with that too then. But yeah, they wanted to get Peter Cushing. Now, I actually read this the other day, and I know I said I didn't do any research, but no, I did look at a Wikipedia article. I have a smartphone. You can't look at porn all the time. Sometimes you got to break up the monotony and be like, all right, you Google Halloween. You got to be like, oh, wait, no. Rob Zombies was the last one to come out. Halloween 78. And it's like, did you mean John Carpenter's Halloween 2018? No, I didn't mean that one. I meant Halloween 1978. So, like, you look it up. And you see that, like, Peter Cushing actually regretted never not taking the role of Sam Loomis. It was one of the roles he regretted not taking. And Donald Pleasance was so ecstatic to do it, because his daughter was a big fan of Assault on Precinct 13, that he gave John Carpenter 7 days. Like, John Carpenter had Donald Pleasance for 7 days. One, I know Donald Pleasance was that in demand as an actor. Or, like, he just wanted to be on set for 7 days. Like, fuck this. So, but if you think about all the shots and everything that have Donald Pleasance, they shot, like, 80% of that movie in 7 days.
I mean, and that's, I guess, sort of the good old days of doing films and stuff like that. And I guess on an independent level, you would still get that. Because, like, we could go and shoot something right now, get the people. But, you know, if you go and shoot something that's like a union movie, you're breaking up the script. You're giving people outlines of everything. You're, yeah, you know, this person can only work on these days. This person can only work on these days. All of a sudden, you're months and months into production. You couldn't make a movie like Halloween now. You can make new Halloween movies and call them Halloween to confuse people and fuck up the timeline, but you can't make that Halloween now.
Yeah, you know, he goes from being like, you know, just some guy to, you know, brother to uncle to cousin to witch to, you know, like...
to witch.
I mean, like, part six, he's technically... like into witchcraft, like, you know, it's like,
no, yeah,
it's like Halloween meets Warlock. You're like, ooh, runes.
He got really into black metal summer.
He got really into black metal that summer. Get back, yeah, I'm really into the, you know, the Swedish, you know, yeah, it's good things. So, yeah, they started Halloween in May. They made this movie 20 days, and then they put it on the theaters. And this is what blew my mind, Mike. Because, like, I think when a movie comes out now, like, I don't get excited for the release date anymore because I've seen previews for it for 3 years.
Right.
Like, you know, like, if a new Avengers movie comes out, it can't come out till 2028 now. Like, because they need 4 years to promote the fucking movie. To release the video game, to release, you know, the TV show, the kids' coloring book, all the merchandising, like, making a movie.
Which
now,
Halloween has all of.
It has all that, but it didn't start off with all of that.
It's true.
You know, like, it just was like, you know, what day are we putting it out? It's Halloween. Put it out the Friday before Halloween. Okay. October 20th. Okay, that's good. We're doing it. And they put this movie out. And through word of mouth, it becomes, at the time, the number one grossing independent film.
And not only that, but the way the theaters were booked at that time, it wasn't like now or, you know, last year. When a movie would just come out, it would be in hundreds or even 1,000+ theaters. It wasn't like that. You would book a string of theaters, and if it did well, it would expand to some other cities and then expand some more.
It wasn't like a wide release.
No,
limited release.
It was like a tour.
And they still had that when we were kids.
Right.
Like, this movie's on limited release. This movie's on wide release. Yes. You know, I remember that now.
Yeah.
And that makes a lot of sense now. I just learned something. You can learn things on this podcast, too.
Educational.
Like, for example, for you kids that are growing up in this post-apocalyptic world, you know, you used to be able to go to a place on a Friday night and spend $20 on popcorn.
I was just talking about this with a friend of mine. We were like, imagine, like, it's crazy when you look at kids and stuff now and you try to explain to them things when you were a kid. Imagine explaining to a kid who's born now, 20 years from now, like, to watch a movie, we used to pay a bunch of money to huddle together in a dark room and all watch it together projected on a wall.
Yeah.
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 Like, when that was $100 night out.
I used to spend $75 by myself to sit next to a complete stranger to watch a comic book movie at midnight. And now, thanks to our lovely pandemic and not being able to go anywhere or do anything, I won't do that anymore. And now I look at that and I'm repulsed by it. Like, I used to go and sit next to strangers.
Ugh.
Not masked.
Not masked.
Oh. Or
looking at all their faces.
Yeah, look at all these faces. Which, by the way, I know this has nothing to do with Halloween. Actually, it does because masks. But, hey, chicks out there, the face coverings. I'm digging it. Like, you know, I'm at the convenience store. I see the face coverings. I like that. I don't know why. I think everyone's in a harem now.
And like, I'm not in charge of this harem at all. I'm looking in on the harem, like, oh, look at all these women in the harem.
But still, you might catch something.
You just get a look, you know, you get looks, you're doing things. Like, my wife looks great in a mask. I think like that when she puts on the mask, she looks great. Like, she's great to begin with, don't get me wrong. But I don't know, now I just focus on her eyes a lot more. I don't know what it is.
I like that. It's sort of romantic in a way.
It is. Yeah. In like a weird society law of covering your face before you leave your house. Stand 5 feet apart. No, 6 feet. That's the social distancing.
6 feet is social distancing.
Alice Cooper didn't write a song about social distancing, though. Civil disobedience, but not social distancing.
He's got to get on it.
Well, he does have a song about something like that. I don't know. Alice Kelly. Anyway, back to Halloween. So, we talked a little bit about how the movie was made. We talked a little bit about some of the people that, you know, were brought on board with it. You had Jamie Lee Curtis. This is her big debut.
Yeah.
You know, she did other things, but this is like, you know,
the one that matters. This is the first one that really matters.
PJ Souls, she's in it. Love her.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
She's even great in Stripes, you know?
Yeah, she is.
Donald Pleasance. You get Nick Castle as one of the people that played the Shape. There's like three
Shape.
there's three people in this movie that played Michael Myers.
And he comes back later.
He does. So, now let's run down, like, if you, now Mike, I'm going to ask you.
Okay.
You have to explain the movie Halloween to someone who's never seen it before. You can only talk about Halloween as being the standalone movie. So you can't include any of the mythos or anything that come in after the fact. You can only talk about it as the movie it is. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm.
Okay.
Here's what I would do. I would say, this is how you approach this film. Imagine, Tony.
Yes.
That you work in a prison for the criminally insane.
All right.
A child is brought in who's murdered his sister. He is never getting out of here. He's dark.
I'm personally making sure that never happens.
Yeah, yeah, he is dark. He is violent. He's never even going to learn how to interact with society. Time goes by. You see him get stranger, more distant, darker, more evil. His own doctors are calling him pure evil and want him locked away forever. Then one day you think to yourself, I'm going to teach him to drive. Halloween.
See, I didn't mean to laugh before he did that, because as soon as you said,
you knew where it was going.
I knew exactly where it was going. I freaking absolutely loved it, because the whole buildup, I'm sitting there going like, let's remake Halloween. I'm getting excited. Let's do it better than Rob Zombie. Let's give him that backstory, but not focus so much on the serial killer part, just in the darkness part. Yeah, you know, because someone around him had to give him lessons, right?
Right.
Someone had to teach him how to drive. Because, again, as you said, he gets locked away at the age of six.
Yeah, six years old.
In 1963,
Never getting out.
Yeah, never getting out. Not seeing the light. There was never
his doctors refer to him as evil.
Yeah. He has the blackest eyes, the devil's eyes. It's said numerous times. Yeah, good. Okay, that's a great way to describe that movie. Yeah, because like that's like looking back, it's such a classic staple horror movie. The one thing that like you're like, well, how does he know how to drive?
Yeah,
then like it's just that's the big mulligan, the pink elephant in all of the Halloween
franchise. And here's the thing, like I've heard people, and there is a throwaway line where he's like, "Why would somebody teach him how to drive?"
I guess someone around here gave him lessons.
And it is just sort of an off the cuff throwaway line to explain away.
You find out a few films down the road that the person that he's talking to actually has a bigger part to play in everything.
Right, right. But again, I mean, this is all if you like that continuity.
Yeah, if you follow that path of if that's your branch of Halloween Christianity. Is there a Martin Luther for Halloween? Is there a guy like that broke down the Compass International office and like nailed the rules of the Halloween franchise to the wall? Like he can no longer do this. He can no longer do that. Like Martin Luther did to the Catholic Church. I don't know.
Blumhouse.
Huh?
Blumhouse?
Blumhouse, yeah. they're doing everything now. But so he's driven away.
Well, and here's the thing where I was going to go with that. It's not even because somebody said to me once, like, oh, well, driving's not that hard. You can kind of watch somebody and kind of figure it out. He has to drive well enough that he's driving around this town undetected while they're looking for him.
In a government-issued vehicle.
Yeah, so he's not drawing it. He's driving well enough that he's drawing no attention to himself during the manhunt.
Yeah, during the manhunt, in a small neighborhood, in a government-issued vehicle.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's driving really well, presumably.
Now, mind you, this is now 1978. So there's not like GPSs, there's not low jacks, there's no cell phones, there's no triangulation on things. Like, you know, you have to do a wiretap, you have to find a communist, and they have to come overseas, and they have to put a bug in the phone, and then the receiver outside that looks like an antenna, but it's disguised as a palm tree. They're like, oh, is there a palm tree in the middle of Pasadena? That makes sense, actually. Why is there a palm tree in the middle of Haddonfield, Illinois? There you go. Because it was shot in Pasadena.
Because there is. If you look at some of the wide shots.
Yeah, there's a lot of palm trees in that movie. And the same freaking leaves. They just move the leaves around.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite behind-the-scenes stories on a movie. And you can find this in a few of the different commentaries and documentaries behind-the-scenes things. But they could only get, like, so many bags of leaves. So they had to just keep sweeping them up and moving them to the next location.
Imagine if that was your job. Like, I'm working on Halloween. What do you do? I rake fucking leaves all day. Fucking landscaper.
Somebody, after that movie became a big hit, somebody was, like, bragging to their friends. Yeah. Like, see those leaves? I threw those there. Yeah. Then I picked him up, threw him in the next door.
Carved that fucking pumpkin, man. That's what I did on my break. The iconic mask. You know, there was a few different ideas for the mask. One was like a clownish kind of mask.
Right.
And they were like new. And then
similar to his mask in the opening of the film.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they went with the William Shatner Redux mask. Where, like, they opened up the eyes a little bit and spray painted it white, and so only spent like $1.98 on it or something like that.
Here's what I'd like to believe. I've heard the stories with it, with the William Shatner mask. I like to believe that there was somebody on that film, and I know this isn't real, like they just saw it as sort of an expressionless mask, but there's somebody out there who worked on this film who saw the evil in William Shatner. And took this William Shatner mask and was like, I'm going to make the world see what I've always seen.
Jamie Lee Curtis has to babysit this kid. You know, Tommy Doyle. That's what she's doing. That's what she's doing in her life. Here's this lady. She's in school. Because she's a lady. She's not a teenager. She's a lady. She's a woman. She's walking around. Like, no 19-year-old looks like that in this day and age. None. Like, you know, like, she's not showing anything off. She's very conservative.
Yeah, and this isn't like now when like they'll get people who are like just 18 or 19 to play the high schoolers. This is when like a 40-year-old was supposed to be in high school.
Yeah,
this is that time in movies. Yeah,
look at Grease. Yeah, Rizzo. Yeah, she was in high school.
This is dudes with gray hair and receding hairlines. Yeah. They were like, it's rough being a freshman.
Yeah. Yo, freshman year, how about it, huh? Yeah. So, Michael Myers is now out. He's wandering the streets of Haddonfield, driving around, breaking into hardware stores. And the sheriff's blaming on kids. No one's believing. Dr. Loomis is running around talking about how death is coming to your town. Which, I love this. Was it trope, the word I'm looking for? Yeah. In all these horror movies to begin with. Like, you know, you have death's coming to your town. You know, it's got a death curse. You're all doomed. There's always that one guy that's like, don't go there. And I'm like, I'm going to go with. We're all going to go. It's going to be fine. Don't listen to him. He's over there doing his thing. He's touched. He's touched by the angels. You don't pay attention to him.
He's just being negative.
You know?
Ignore that.
It's that toxic energy that you keep telling everyone about that keeps people away from the suburbs and this lake. And, like, you know, what do people do? They get homes in the suburbs, and Michael Myers kills them. They go to the lake, Jason kills them. It's, you know, these people are just looking out for you.
I saw a video recently, and they were talking about that character in the Friday the 13th movie, the old town guy.
Oh, Crazy Ralph.
I love him. Crazy Ralph. I couldn't remember the character's
name. That's who I wanted to be when I grew up.
You wanted to be Crazy Ralph when you grew up? You wanted to be the guy who was like, you're doomed!
To ride around a bike, wear the vest.
Your mom's like, Tony, stop. We're in the grocery store. You're all doomed!
I always said that people, they bought the store brand product. Like, you buy, like, store brand instant pudding. It's not the same as Jell-O. You're doomed. You're doomed from Jump Street with that.
What I love, though, is that, like, Crazy Ralph is in multiple movies.
He is.
Yeah. Like, and I was watching, like, a YouTube video, and they were talking about how they spent more time on his death than some other deaths. And is it three when he gets killed?
He actually gets killed in two.
Is it two? Okay.
It is two. Jason kills him.
Okay, so when he gets killed and they talk about like that, and they were like, was Crazy Ralph really that important of a character that there's that much build up his death? Kind of, though.
Yeah.
But I would argue, though, that you really get the full like Ahab character with Loomis.
Oh, yeah, you do get the full Ahab character. You do, no, he is, like, you look at protagonists, it's like, Beowulf, Loomis. Like,
Beowulf and Loomis. The classical definition of a protagonist. You know,
I'm not putting Van Helsing in there, because, like, Van Helsing's not a household name.
Right.
Beowulf, Loomis.
Beowulf and Loomis.
Household names right there.
Absolutely.
You know, you have the protagonist, and he's tooling around the town trying to drum up everyone, like, hey, evil's here, and everything, you know, and then, like, everyone goes and does their own little things at night. Like, you know, it's Halloween. People are going trick-or-treating. People are trying to go bone. I think at one point in time, like, this dude Bob's trying to figure out how to get a three-way in also with the little girl.
Yeah, there was something about that, wasn't there?
He's like, I'm going to go over there. I'm going to take all of your clothes off. You're going to take all of Anne's clothes off. Then we're going to take all of Lindsay's clothes off, and we're going to have a good night. I'm pretty sure that was in jest, but you can't be jest joking like that
Not
in 2020.
Now. Back then, you
could. Back then in 78, yeah, you could joke about all that
I mean, even well into the 80s. Look at Back to the Future.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like PG rated. It's basically a movie about how much a guy and his mom kind of want to bang each other.
Yes. If, like, you, there was actually a show on Netflix I watched. It's called Glow.
Okay.
Yeah. Mark Maron is...
I watched the first season.
Okay. Mark Maron's pitching a movie to people, and it's all about a boy that goes back in time to have sex with his mom. And everyone's like, you're talking about Back to the Future? He's like, no, I'm not talking about Back to the Future. It's a completely different concept.
It was... I always use the example a couple of times. So Tony had mentioned, I worked on a couple of movies, and a few times people have been like, oh, have you ever wished you could work on, like, a big mainstream movie? No. And here's why they won't give me the budget to do that. I would make Back to the Future, but when he tries to get his mom and dad together, that's when his picture starts fading and he realizes he's got to knock up his own mom.
I'm my own dad.
He's his own dad.
And he's forever stuck in this time loop where he has to keep going back in time and knocking up his mom.
And boning his own mom.
How does that, what's that like to be your own John Connor?
Yeah, and that's, and it would also tie into Terminator.
That's
when the Terminators would come in, and that's why they don't give me money.
Yeah. Well, I would give you money. That sounds like a great idea. You throw a RoboCop in there because you got the dystopian feel of, you know, science just taking over everything, but we're not focusing on basic infrastructure to support the science, so everything starts crumbling around it. These major corporations have to come in, and then all of a sudden they're buying up the police force, and now they're trying to just, you know, militarize the police force even further to keep the citizens at bay, and then they're poisoning the water. I mean, it's just Detroit.
And Detroit files for bankruptcy.
Yeah, Detroit files for bankruptcy.
These are things that'll never happen.
Never. Never. Ever. Do not watch RoboCop with the
science fiction.
Just never watch RoboCop with the director's commentary on. And after the year, like, if you have a time machine, go back in time and live your life as it is. But never listen to RoboCop with a director's commentary on. Because it's just going to tell you everything that happens after 2016 forward.
Spoiler alert for the future.
Yeah. All right. So we talked about RoboCop during Halloween. We talked about a lot of other things. We're going to talk about, like, the music. Like, that's your thing. You're the music guy here, right?
Love the music.
Like,
yeah.
It's not that funny of a movie. So, like, everyone's gonna tell the one good scare. There you go. There was that punny joke. That great. The sheriff did a great job with that. But the music, the Halloween, the score, like, what was it, a 4-5 time pattern he plays?
Yeah.
Like, it's like, you know, offbeat. It's very eerie. Now, like, you watch this movie without the sound on, it's not scary.
No.
You watch this movie with the sound on, it's still not that scary, but it works.
Right.
You know, actually, it is scary. Scary as fuck. when those little pitches go up, and, you know, the little illumination they do on with the mask and the music cues and everything else like that, and the slow buildup of everything, like, ah.
I'm a synthesizer player. So John Carpenter was probably more of an influence on me playing wise than a lot of people who are thought of just as musicians first. Because I think even now, even though John Carpenter has spent the last decade or two as just primarily a musician, not even a filmmaker.
Yeah, he's
making albums and touring.
The last thing he made was that Asylum movie, right?
Yeah. The Asylum movie was the last thing that he directed. He did two episodes of Masters of Horror and then the Asylum movie. And he's produced a couple of things, but he hasn't really been directing. But he's put out multiple albums. He's toured. I went to see him live. Really great show.
Yeah, he came through the last 2 years.
Yeah. Really great live show if anybody hasn't gotten a chance to check it out, or if tours ever happen again.
Yeah.
Really, if that ever happens again.
If John Carpenter happens to come to your town, that could mean two different things right now. Like, he's making escape from Kansas, or...
I do have a funny John Carpenter story, though. So I realized over time, there I love movies, and there's so many filmmakers that I love their work. But I think I've realized over time that John Carpenter is probably my favorite filmmaker.
Yeah.
And really what that came down to,
I'm saying, yeah, like, yes, it is your favorite filmmaker. Yeah,
you're fucking right it is. Or I'll punch you. Yeah.
You can't say Spielberg because he's a bitch. It's Carpenter.
It's not Spielberg, trust me. That's a whole another rant for another time. But not that I don't like like, not that he hasn't made good things. He's made, you know what, fuck it, we're doing this rant. Not that Spielberg hasn't made great movies, but Spielberg has spent most of his career making two movies. He's made an alien movie and a Nazi movie. Sometimes he's combined them.
Oh, okay, yes, yes, okay. Jaws. Like, that's not Alien.
If that had kept going. Because no, he even worked aliens in Indiana Jones. So if Jaws had kept going, eventually
the shark would have gone after the Brody family in space.
The shark would have jumped out. You would have saw a Nazi armband around its fin.
Gets a little Diglockian bell. Takes off and goes after the astronaut family of
the
fourth generation of this family's this shark stalking.
Absolutely, it would have happened. So anyway, John, I realized like John Carpenter is my favorite filmmaker, because I could even come up with it like I could probably do a top 10 John Carpenter film list and not include Halloween.
Yeah,
because I love his film so much. So, and that to me is what says more than anything else, because this movie is so ubiquitous in our culture. It's a part of the Library of Congress National Film Registry.
It is. Like, yeah. But another thing is, like, it's everywhere. It's not. It's Halloween. Like when someone's like, oh, I can't wait for Halloween. Yeah, me neither. Like, because, like, I automatically think of Fear Fest on AMC. Like, I'm going to get to watch Halloween any time of day I want, you know. Not that I own four different versions of it on DVD already, but just the fact that I'm going to be able to sit down and watch it out of sequence, like Halloween, Halloween 4, Halloween Resurrection, Halloween 3.
Or in
3.
Sequence, depending on
what
direction you choose.
Well, I was actually talking about the way they show it on Fear Fest.
Okay.
Like, they never just sit down and go, like, we're watching it part 1, 2, 3. Because there's publishing rights, and people own different things at different times, and they only have it for a certain period of time. And this year, AMC may only have, like, 1, 5, half a 7, and the producer's cut of 6. You know, like, which I would be fine with that. But... yeah, so I just get excited when Halloween comes on. It's such a good movie. I hate to say it, but it's wholesome.
It's a wholesome slasher movie. Yeah,
because it's a hug.
It's
a warm hug. It's a warm hug that stabs.
You know, it's a warm hug with a knife.
There's not a lot of blood.
No, there's not.
By today's standards, this is almost a PG film.
Yeah,
there's little to no blood. There's some nudity.
With some really minor trims, you could get a PG-13 on this.
Yeah, you could easily. Like
minor trims.
There's nothing, you know. Now, going back to the movie itself, you know, this guy, he's just going around, you know. These girls happen to yell at him while, you know, at the passenger side of their best friend's ride, you know. And then, like, he just keeps driving because he doesn't want these scrub-ass bitches. You know, so he just keeps going. You know, that's a story. That's life. Michael Myers, but he keeps tabs on throughout the night. He's checking up on him, you know? And he comes by and he takes out Bob. And you can see at this moment in time when he takes out Bob, he admires the work he does. Like, he puts him into the wall, into a cabinet. Like, a 70s solid wooden cabinet with a chef's knife. Like, I'm not sure if any of you people have ever tried to stab something into a wall with a chef's knife. One, I recommend doing it. Use some oak. You know, like, make sure it's oak and solid. Don't do this on some particle board bullshit that, you know, bathroom saver people did. I mean, kitchen savers did. Because then you're just going to stab through that. It's going to hit the china. That's going to come out of the thing. The cabinet door is going to break off. It's going to be problems. Trust me. Make sure it's a solid beam that you stab this whatever. And just use a chicken breast and try to see, get the stick and hang on the wall with nothing falling off of it. Michael Myers, true artist in this setting.
I would argue, and especially in the 90s, the whole meta horror thing became so popular. I would argue that's almost a pre-meta horror moment when he's admiring his own handiwork.
Yeah.
It's almost fourth wall breaking.
Yeah.
Because it's the character sort of acknowledging how fucking cool that kill was.
Did you see that?
Did you see that, though?
And then he comes up because he has jokes. Like, he comes upstairs in the sheet.
Yeah.
And he has the glasses on. He's like, hey, I got your beer. Hey, let me see them titties.
All right, and now I'm going to choke you with the phone cord.
There's an alternate universe version of that where him and PJ Souls run away together. And he's just, like, cruising around, and she's in the passenger seat. She's like, wow, you're a really good driver. He's like, let me tell you.
I had lessons
when I was a kid. That's all they did. They said, come by, give us all of us wackadoos lessons.
Driver's Ed in prison for the criminally insane is a lot more thorough than you would imagine.
You got to get those credits in somehow, you know? And they're all going to be bus drivers later on, because you remember your bus drivers growing up. I do stand up with some of them. They're a little off. So, you know, he's now dispatching of these people. You know, he's gone after them. We don't know why. We don't know why at this moment in time. There's no plot device. There's nothing. You know, in the next movie, they set things up. And then 40 years after that, they take those things away. But they set something up for a plot device to keep to propel
the
this.
The gods giveth, the gods taketh away.
They do. They just do. But like he's just going after these people, and Dr. Loomis is doing his thing, hanging out by the Myers house the whole time. Because he's convinced that he's going to come back home. He's convinced that he's going to come back to his house because that's what he's most familiar with. He's freaking three houses down the street, killing everybody. How good of a doctor is Dr. Loomis? Where he's just like, yeah, I'm just going to hang out here, scaring these punk-ass kids away from the Myers house. You know, Lonnie, yeah, get your ass away from there. Look at me. And then Sheriff Brackett scares the shit out of him. I love that scene. This is one of my favorite scenes. The Donald Pleasant, the Dr. Loomis character, like, is he finally, the car's sitting right there the whole time. He looks, he's like, oh, there's the car that he took from me. Oh, he's in the neighborhood. He's not at the house. These little kids come running down. You know, one, Jamie Lee Curtis goes above and beyond as a babysitter. Laurie Strode, that's a woman you want watching your kids. Like, what's she doing Tuesday, September 8th? Because Phantasm is showing at the drive-in in upstate Pennsylvania. And I want to go, but I can't find a babysitter to watch My Two Crotch Goblins. So I can't go. I need a Laurie Strode in my life. That's what I need.
is that going to be on, like, because I assume, you know, you're a good parent, so you're probably going to want to hear some references, maybe interview this babysitter a little bit. How are you going to work in, like, so if a white-masked killer broke into the house after escaping from prison that he's been in since he was six, and before you ask, yeah, he drove here. When he breaks in, what's your first reaction? Where do you go with this?
I'm hoping that, you know, that wasn't on the list. It's not really like your poison control, fire department, you know, those kind of things. Because again, they're two and one. You know, they're not getting into too much trouble, hopefully. You know, the big keep the cat away from them. That's pretty much where we're at right now. But I'm going to add that to the criteria. Because, like, what is their game plan? Do they have a game plan? Because you need that game plan. This is Philadelphia.
Yeah, absolutely.
We live in Philadelphia where, like, we've had more people die in this city than there are days this year.
Yeah, and right now we don't have a serial killer in Philadelphia.
Do you want to talk about that?
Do you not know about this?
Do you not know about this? We do have a serial killer in Philadelphia.
Not according to the police. The police say we don't
have a serial killer. No, we totally have a serial killer.
Oh, yeah, no, we do. Yeah. That was the joke.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so for anybody who doesn't know, there's definitely a serial killer in Philadelphia
there
right now.
There totally is.
But there was a statement from the
unrelated, police. They keep finding unrelated containers with women butchered inside of them.
Yeah.
But they're none of them are
like
related.
Bus stops, parking lots, things like
parking
that.
Parking garages,
crowded
things like
places,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crowded, like, vehicle-type places. So, similar murders with all these. There was a statement from the police, and it basically was just, like, the nothing to see here, move along kind of thing. They were like, yeah, there's no serial killer.
We legit have a Jack the Ripper scenario going on.
Yeah, it's coincidental.
But, like, Philly's such a fun town.
It's a great place. Right around the corner from where I grew up, which isn't that far from here. Philadelphia, and I know everywhere has this to some degree, but I feel like with Philadelphia, and I've toured enough where I feel like I can say this with a little bit of authority, we are on top of each other neighborhood wise in a way that I feel like other places aren't. Like other places have, like, you know, the good and bad parts of town, the
it's
sort
all
of middle ground.
In.
It's all mixed. It's almost like block to block.
Yeah.
Like you can be in a well off area and a few blocks down the line get shot.
Yeah.
And all you did was cross a street, and it's like you're in a different world. So not far from here where I grew up, someone was recently shot 40 times. That's amazing to me because
was that the guy that was shot in his own garage in Manayunk?
No.
Okay.
This was Northeast Philly. Okay. He was right outside of a playground in the middle of the day. Got shot 40 times. It wasn't that long ago.
Okay, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was amazing about that to me, and I believe he was two.
Sorry, the Manny Young thing was 3 months ago. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's okay. It's you get them mixed up in Philly.
Yeah.
But I believe it was two shooters, but either regardless of whether it was one or two shooters, he wasn't alive that long into that. So at some point, like, they ran out of bullets more than once to stop and reload to continue to shoot a dead body.
Time out. Are you saying since they shot this person more than six times, which is how many times Dr. Loomis shot Michael Myers, that they were putting down what could have been a supernatural serial killer?
I would posit the idea that at the end of this movie, kids saw that and they were like, six isn't enough.
Yeah.
And I think here in Philly, we learned.
Yeah.
We've embraced this movie. I know it's a cultural phenomenon, and it's a part of American culture now because of the Library of Congress thing, like official American culture. But I think in Philadelphia, we've embraced the idea that six times isn't enough to shoot somebody. No. You're not putting them down with six shots.
And actually, they use more than six bullets a day in Philly. Like, the homicide rate in this city is through the roof. I think more than six people die a day in this city.
Oh, probably. There's probably six people who died while we were recording this podcast.
Yeah. You know, barely talking about Halloween.
Yeah.
We managed to cover the Philadelphia serial killer, though.
We did.
Which I'm
is
happy,
important.
Which is important, because no one is talking about
it. It's our own real slasher that's happening right now.
You know what my favorite horror movie is? The Philadelphia serial killer.
I love how they're like, we're not closing the beaches. I mean, the car parks and the... yeah.
Meanwhile, they're probably hoping that serial killer takes place at the homeless encampment down on a Benjamin Parkway.
They just keep leaving suitcases and bins and stuff like that. And with knives in them.
And twist ties. It's like, this, you're making this too easy.
Yeah.
They tarped off all the cameras, too. Jeez.
Yeah. They're like, there's no serial killer. This is our normal annual knife and luggage drop-off.
People want to talk about who's dropping off all these bricks and all these seats. I want who's dropping off all these containers and twist ties and knives and masks. Speaking of knives, masks, and ropes, things that Michael Myers used, at the end of the day, all said and done, Halloween, which on a scale of 1 to 10, where's it sitting for you?
It's close to a 10.
Close to a 10.
The only thing that keeps it from a 10 is little lapses in logic, like the driving thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's the only thing that keeps it from a 10 for me, but it doesn't detract for me when I'm watching it. That's only as an afterthought after the movie when I analyze it.
We think about
that's like, where you pick apart those things. Watching the movie, even now, seeing it dozens and dozens of times, I'm completely into it every time. I'm completely invested into it.
You easily get lost in that movie. Yeah. And I agree with you. Like, I it's close to a 10 for me as well. It's like a 9.5.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And again, that's because there's not enough, in my opinion, at the end of this movie to propel the story forward. But then again, it wasn't meant to be propelled for.
Right.
You know,
it does what it was meant to do.
It does what it was meant to do, and it does it very well.
Yes.
Personally, I feel that the driving thing, you know, has taught me a lesson. Because, like, you know, in this day and age, when you, again, I necessarily have two kids, I got to make extra scratch where I can. Sometimes I'm out there delivering food for people. Sometimes I'm out there delivering other things. Whatever you need, I'll get it to you, okay? I've taken someone a pack of, you know, Starburst and a toothbrush at like 9 o'clock in the morning. Weird combination, but I got it to them. That's what I do, all right? But the one thing that they should have done when they saw all those people out there, like when I'm talking about Halloween, when they drive up and all the other insanos are driving or mentally disabled, handicapped, capable people are wandering around. Wow, we're gonna get flamed for that.
I like insanos. It's like a cereal. Hey, kid!
You want to try some insanos? Each box was a white gal. There's little straight jacket marshmallows. No, but like, what does she do? She leaves the car running. Like, she doesn't, you know, when he jumps on the car, she doesn't, one, hit the, like, you know, throw it in reverse or throw it in drive to try to shake him off the roof. She doesn't turn off the car and grab the keys and leave. She gets out of the car.
Yeah.
You know, after, like, he breaks the window with his bare hand. You know, again, this, I don't know what they're feeding these people in this institution, but he's out there smashing windows with his bare hand, picking people up with one hand.
Well, like, and that's something that, and we'll get more into this when we get to the movie,
is isometric workouts. How to work out without people knowing you're working out.
But that was something with the Rob Zombie Halloween, the second movie in the Halloween franchise that's just called Halloween. Of the three so far that are just called Halloween.
Timeline alternate A1.
Yeah. Universe 42B. The Rob Zombie Halloween, there were certain things that he did, and we'll get into this when we get to that film, but there were things he did to try and address those issues, because he said that those were his problems with the movie when he would step back and analyze it. The driving, and then a bigger issue with him, which I think in his second movie becomes a detriment. I feel like it works for the first movie, and it destroys all logic in the second movie, which we'll get to.
Are you talking about where he accidentally remade Friday 13th Part 2 instead of Halloween Part 2?
No, oh, okay. I was getting into, he chose an actor who is significantly bigger than anyone else who had played the shape before, and part of the reason that he'd done that is because he wanted somebody who could believably physically lift a person up with a knife, who could throw people around. And I understood that, and I actually, a lot of people complained about that to me with the Rob Zombie movie, and that was one of the things I defended on the first one. Now on the second one, that same thing becomes a detriment.
Yeah, I agree with what you just said. My problem with the first Rob Zombie's first Halloween movie is that they dehumanized him. Like, when you give him your every serial killer backstory with the mom and the stepdad, and I'm killing the animals and I'm bullied and I'm no, that's not evil. That's conditioning. That's a victim of your environment. People are going to write letters, and then you're 17 years old and out in Kansas, but we're not going to get into that. hold on. I was going down a
different rabbit. Your name's Tony.
I was going down a different rabbit hole there. But, like, you know, I didn't care for that. But I did like the fact that he made Michael Myers this visceral force.
Right.
Like,
and that's,
that was, like, when I first I remember sitting in the theater, not digging the movie, but the same, like, digging it because, in my opinion, it's another Michael Myers adventure.
Yay. Right.
You know, but at the same time, I was like, this isn't my Michael Myers. And then when
I totally agree with that.
When he has the 4x4 and he's slamming it through the walls, looking for the girl that's hiding behind the wall, I was like, no, this is totally a badass fucking Michael Myers. He's gonna get some shit done.
And that's on the in Rob's eye. And again, we'll get more in depth on that when we get there. But in the first movie, the size of Michael Myers makes perfect sense to me, and I was 100% on board with that. On the second movie, and he used the same actor, which, while I appreciate that, because it would have been weird if he'd scaled him down suddenly.
Also, it goes from Tyler Mane to Nicolas Cage.
Yeah. it really becomes a detriment to the story of the movie.
Yeah, because he's a giant.
Yeah, he's a giant walking around a field covered in blood.
Yeah.
And people are stopping to see if he's okay and talk to him and stuff like that. It becomes problematic, but we'll get there.
Is that guy okay? He's bigger than my Volkswagen. Yeah. Is he fine?
Is that 9-foot guy with a butcher knife covered in blood? You think he needs a ride?
Should we pick on him?
Hey, let's fuck with that guy.
Yeah.
No. So it becomes a detriment. The same thing that I feel like was a really wise decision turns around on him. But you hit on something really important, and we'll get into this on the second one, but what makes this movie so great, and what makes Michael Myers in the first film the scariest iteration of Michael Myers to me, is because he's just some random guy.
Yeah, there's no logical explanation. Yeah, there's no rhyme or reason. No reason.
These kids just fuck with the wrong guy.
Yeah.
They're just,
and they really didn't, like, hey, jerk off, speed kills. That's it.
And that's what I like about it, because especially in the world that we live in, you don't know who the fuck someone else is. Yeah. A stranger, don't know them. That's the point. So you don't know that person you yelled something to didn't just fucking escape from prison, happens to be a perfect driver.
Get around perfectly.
And that's really what he was mad about with the speed, like, kill things. I'm a great fucking driver. Fuck you.
Post speed limit is 25. I'm doing 25, okay? Like, and I never thought about, like, in that
sense.
But
that's what makes him the best Michael Myers to me.
Because, like, you're breaking, the way you're describing it is, like, you know, I always say, like, you know, I'm working in customer service most of my life. I always treat everyone
like I'm walking on eggshells because I don't want to be the guy that sets off the Michael Douglas falling down domino right. kind of thing. Like that, I don't want to be the guy that sets that guy
and
off.
And that's the way I always took yeah. the first Halloween.
Yeah,
like,
no, that's, yeah.
Just in approach. A minor way, they fucked with this guy. Yeah. And it turns out he just fucking escaped from prison yeah. that he's been in since he was six for stabbing
driver.
His sister to death.
And yeah. a perfect driver.
right. Yeah. Happens to know how to drive really well. And you just pissed him off by making fun of that.
yeah. So, yeah, no, yeah. Be kind is what we're trying to stress yeah. out this. And this, in 2020, the one thing you should take away from the movie Halloween is to be kind to people that are driving.
and that's the thing. And it's,
in residential neighborhoods.
I really like Halloween 2. And, of course, we'll get into that when we get to that episode. I do like Halloween 2, but giving him some backstory in that to give him a reason. Because essentially in the end, he escapes.
Yeah.
In the end of the first Halloween. So to give him a reason to stick around to where all of the resolution can come.
Well, time out.
sort of.
For right now, mm-hmm. and where we're at in the Halloween choose-your-own-adventure story, yes, he does escape. But does he escape? Do we know? I mean, we would have found out this October. but Halloween Kills is postponed till
for a year.
For a year now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The real victim of the pandemic.
The real victim of the pandemic.
Us but, wanting to see Halloween Kills.
not Bill and Ted 3. Not Mulan. Not that.
Though I did really like Bill and Ted 3.
I'm going to get around to it. It's on the list. It's hard to watch movies with these kids,
no,
man.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
It's worth it when you get there.
I'm going to.
Yeah.
It's eventually. We're watching The Strain right now. But anyway, nice. We should wrap up this episode.
We should.
Yes.